Our parade of poets continues on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Beth Roberts is busy writing poetry. We'll welcome her and then Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac on Scribble.
Hello, Beth. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
And I'm glad to see you writing poetry again. You took a break for a while.
I did. It was probably 10, 12 years.
Wow. Something
like that.
After, in fact, some success, right? I mean, you had a book published by what university press?
This was from New Issues Press in Kalamazoo.
Yeah. I mean, why did you quit?
Quit.
Stop.
Well, okay.
Take a break.
Yeah. Yeah. No earth-shattering reasons. I think just a number of quotidian events that piled up. I think that probably, you know, when I got that book published, I like to call it my first book, that was in 2001, and I had gotten an Illinois Arts Council Award, and I had taken time off of work. I had some time. I had $5,000 to devote to that effort. I put my young son in preschool. My daughter was already in kindergarten. And so I just could devote those moments to working on poems. And that's why that book got published, I think, when it did. And then after that, I think just I went back to work. And I think that there were a number of things that were also compelling to me. And over time, I found myself otherwise engaged, and then I just sort of drifted away from it and then back again.
Listening to that, it sounds to me that poetry takes time that you have to devote to it. And it is true, you talk about quotidian activities. My day fills up with those sometimes, and you find yourself at the end of the day wondering, where did the time go? What happened? This is not the way I intended to spend the day.
Yeah, I think that's sad if and when that happens. I mean, there are a number of things that can't be avoided. We should sleep a number of hours. We should take some time to eat.
Oh, that's right. Sleep, eat.
I find myself getting impatient. I guess since I started writing poetry again, I've realized how much, you know, I missed it even though I didn't realize it at the time. So sometimes I'm impatient with other things that take time, and I find myself eating at the same time that I read, for example, just like, you know, when you're a kid and you want to do two or three things at once, trying to get back to that way of living.
So what happened to begin again? I mean, did it all of a sudden one day you...
Oh, well, my younger child, who's now 21, went off to Germany for his senior year of high school, and that was... that was something brand new, and it really changed how I spent my time and also how I spent my mental and emotional energy. And so I decided when he was gone that I would do two things for a new challenge or an old challenge resurfaced. And that was to write poems again and to learn German. So I started taking German classes at Augustana. And I would switch off my nights. One night I would do my German homework, and the next night I would try to start writing again. I was nervous about the writing. I didn't know if I would be able to get back to that. But I thought if I tried two things, then if one didn't take, I could maybe focus on the other one. German didn't take.
Do you notice a change in your poetry now that it's, I mean,
yeah.
Have things been happening those 10 years that you know, outside took off?
That's a good question. I don't know if things were happening in the meantime to change it. But I did try something... I didn't want to return to, frankly, what had started to become, it started to feel like a process that was a little too easy and a little too pat, and therefore not very interesting. At least I was falling into a cookie cutter way of writing, and that wasn't very interesting to me. So I tried something that I always wanted to do, and I always wanted to write long poems. And I still can't write long poems, but now I'm writing with very long lines. And so that feels really good.
Yeah, that's interesting. My daughter is an artist, and she will achieve great success in one field and quit and start something brand new and work that for a while, has success in that, and then quits and tries something else. Is that need for something new important to you?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, she's searching, and I think that artists, at least that's what I think, is that artists are searching for something. And I think that's what creation is. You know, it's it's making something new and then making something new again. It's just a good way to live, I think.
Could we have a sample of your current poetry? Do you?
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I have a couple of projects going on. One is a full-length book manuscript called Evolvers that I'm trying to get published, and so that's out there. And then, meanwhile, I've also started a new project. I only have about 10 poems, and they're all from the point of view of a chimera, sort of a human. It's not really science fiction, but in any case, that's what I'm. That's my challenge right now. That's something new that I'm trying. Maybe I'll just read one from the Evolvers manuscript, since that was this is an earlier one. So this one mentions someone named Quan, who I work with here at Augustana, and this is just based on a conversation that we had one day a couple of years ago. It's called "The Work of Thy Hands." I asked Quan if there was a Western equivalent to the message or symbol portrayed by beheading. He said not really. Not a lynching? But he had moved on to the clean flash of a Japanese sword, a thing of beauty and no comparison. I had pictured a body kneeling still, still with a dream at the head. The enemy swelling or desiccated beside the body suspended and relocating itself briefly between ground and air, then a thought flying out. But that is not it. This changes everything. I learned the usual way is to hack through the neck, saw a way out. How much time from beginning to end depends on the persons. How much pain changes cannot be determined, even on video, but the persons do not anticipate a quick breach and then light. They have time to look at the hard work of their hands, veins leading over the knuckles, ways out of the wilderness.
Wow. A beheading. That's that is an interesting subject for a poem.
I don't write a lot of poems about beheadings.
No. You're not on a beheading theme,
no,
I take it.
Thankfully.
When did you first get interested in poetry? Were you back in grade school?
In grade school, I was writing stories. One stands out about a cat living in China.
Well,
named Good Fortune. I remember that. High school, I was searching through various art forms. I started playing violin when I was 6, and I liked visual art and reading, of course, and just writing stories. And finally, they offered a creative writing class in my high school when I was a senior. And I took that with a good feeling, and then I just took to it from there.
And the shift to poetry then occurred at that point?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you done any other writing?
Well, I write at Augustana. I'm a writer and editor in communication and marketing, and so I do all kinds of writing in my job, which is lucky for me since I was an English major. And I write things ranging from, you know, brochure copy to web stories to white papers, and I do a lot of editing too.
But that's kind of work writing.
Yes, that's work writing. So other kinds of writing. I like to write, I call them letters, but they're emails. I write long letters to a couple of very good friends. And I don't write fiction, you know, or prose as such, unless the poems sort of lead in that direction from time to time. And I write emails that are much longer than what normally people would probably write in their emails, but I'm much more comfortable writing than speaking, frankly.
Oh, yeah. I'm a talker, not a writer. Could you read us another poem? Do you have another?
Sure. Maybe I'll read one from the newer project, since that's what I'm most interested in right now.
It's on the Chimera?
Yes. And is that how you pronounce that? I should probably learn how to pronounce that word.
Chimera.
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 How about Chimera?
Chimera? No. Like Camaro?
Well, the answer is neither. None of us know. Well,
we have no clue, and dictionaries will not help us anymore.
No, they won't.
Anyway, this is not. I'm trying to figure out what I should say about this because it's a weird concept, I suppose. But
I think you just said it. It's weird.
Okay. All right. This is also my most recent draft. I just wrote this one earlier this week. I returned from California, and a couple of neat things happened there. I was visiting family that I decided I wanted to try to put into a poem, and one was sea level, the idea of sea level, and the other one was playing with kids who are categorizing their toys into various little groups and how gratifying that is mm-hmm. for kids and others, I think, just to divide things up into groups. Anyway, this one's called With Her. One day, at sea level, I taught a child to categorize. We started with her animals. Animals of the jungle, in the trees, on the savanna, on the farm, on three or four legs, mystical. Or, as she said, mythical. Then we started arranging the animals around us. Animals below, on, then above the sand. Sand crabs and shifting exoskeletons, stars, birds, then birds and stars. She told me she already knew people are animals. We separated the people into different kinds of animals. Animals of the city, in the desert, on the farm, friends, strangers who may be friends but maybe not, elves, teachers, police officers, lab coats, mommies and daddies. She said she sold seashells by the seashore. She said she knew what kind of animal I was, and then what other kind of animal I was. I was a stranger friend on three or four legs. The tide was coming in.
Whoa. I really like that. Yeah. Keep going, Beth.
Don't stop now. Are you preparing this for a book or a collection of some kind?
Yeah, because I have a number of them now. I imagine that's what's happening. I don't know that I can keep it going for an entire book length. That would be, but maybe a chapbook. You know,
How long does a book of poetry have to be? I've seen some pretty short ones.
Yeah, generally, what I'm seeing is that somewhere starting at 48 pages, which I can pretty much just manage usually. Then going up to 90, 100, 120 or whatever. Then chapbooks are shorter. They would be more in the 20 to 35 page range, I think.
I know a lot of readers would, or listeners are also poets themselves and would like to hear how in the world one goes about getting a book published.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I wish I knew.
Well, you had one published.
It's so different right? Now than it was. Yeah, it's so different now than it was back then. Back then, I started submitting my manuscript through mail, regular old mail, only to award series because I thought if I'm going to go through this effort to try to get something published, I want it to be read.
Right.
I just want, and you know, why not try? And it actually, surprisingly, very surprisingly, and still surprising. It still surprised me, was a finalist for lots of big awards. But then the press, New Issues, I think it was a finalist for the Green Rose Prize, which didn't win, but they still wanted to publish it. So that was a happy happenstance. And then this time I found out, you know, you can submit your manuscript through Submittable. I don't know if you've heard about mm-hmm. this. It's just an online. It's a great...
I haven't heard about it at all. So.
Yeah. Just go to submittable.com, set up your account, and you know, it just takes you through the steps. You submit a PDF or a Word document. You give them your basic information, and it's really easy.
The serious question, though, is how do you start a poem?
Oh.
I mean, do you sit down and say, I'm going to write a poem? Or does a thought come to you and you think, oh, I've got to follow this?
Well, take that last poem you just read.
Mm-hmm.
sea level.
That one is a fairly easy example.
What began, I mean, what triggered that?
Well, my parameters right now are somewhat smaller, fewer than usual, because I'm trying to write these poems with this chimera and persona. So there's that to begin with. But I have tried sitting down and looking, of course, looking at the paper or the screen now. And that's very frightening, and you end up feeling like an absolute idiot. I usually do. I have a hard time coming up with something. So I try to go in with something that has stood out. And in this case, it really was. I was on a hike out to the ocean at Point Reyes with my sister-in-law and my sister. And we were leaving, and my sister-in-law said something like, "Now we're leaving sea level." And she said it with such awe that I recognized what she meant and what that is, to be at sea level, and what that means in terms of where you are on the planet, where you are standing, what level, you know, what your level is, and everything that's below and above. And that just stuck with me. And then really just that experience of being with my two nieces, and they had gotten some little animals for Easter. And immediately their sudden thought was to divide them into these groups. And I thought about, you know, current states of affairs and how we are focusing so much on different groups of people, and the various levels and layers involved with that, and how problematic it is, even though we tend to like dividing things into categories. Not sure it's always the best idea. So, I mean, this doesn't have all of that in there, but that's why that idea of categorizing just stuck with me.
Yeah, that's interesting. I suppose the thing is, you have to be ready.
Ready, yeah.
And then when an idea comes and the opportunity presents itself, you write.
Yeah, you have to be prepared.
Well, Beth, keep on writing. I mean, we want to see this come together in a book or a series of poems. And in the meantime, we'll find out how to pronounce Chimera.
Yeah, me too.
Maybe Garrison Keillor can help us as we turn to him for the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Well, we're coming to the end of Poetry Month, and we're ending nicely with Beth Roberts.
Well, we are. I've heard some good comments about the people that have already read, too, so...
Excellent.
We must have done good in picking this time.
Have you written your poem?
No, I haven't written my poem, but I have thought about it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I have the first line. You want to hear my first line of my poem?
What's your first line?
My poem is called This Poem. The first line is, "This poem was written in China." But anyway, but you'll see the rest of it before, maybe by next year.
Okay.
It takes a while to soak in.
Well, I mean, remember, I'm way ahead of you. When Roald dressed in a tuxedo, his friends all thought he looked neato. They had feared that they might have experienced the fright of seeing him wearing a Speedo. You can't beat poetry like that.
No, you can't. No.
With a stick, maybe.
don't submit that to submit.
You're holding a book of poetry.
I'm holding a book of poetry. One of the things we've raised this particular month, given the political climate of the day, is whether poetry has any business becoming political or not. And I was surprised by the number of poets who said, yes, indeed it does, and who are, in fact, making their voices heard. And it just turns out that Ice Cube Press, we've heard from them before, they're over in North Liberty, Iowa. Steve Semkin runs a small press that he calls Ice Cube Press. And one of the books he just sent me, which isn't really due for publication until June 1st, is a book by Taylor Broby, B-R-O-R-B-Y, who was the editor last year of Ice Cube Press book called Fracture, which is a book of essays, poems, and stories on fracturing, mm-hmm. fracking. Taylor Broby was one of the ones just a couple of months ago arrested at Standing Rock trying to about the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Yeah.
And he's out with a book of poems that are poems that address the whole problem of fracking and what's going on in North Dakota. The book is called Crude, and it's a book of about 30 or 40 poems.
Is that C-R-U-D-E?
C-R-U-D-E, crude oil, but also okay. Crude is what's happening to the land. His poems are not out-and-out angry poems about fracking. They try to get in edgewise. For one thing, part of the problem with North Dakota is that everybody sort of writes North Dakota off. You know, that land is worthless anyway. There's nothing there. It's all flat. Mm-hmm. And what he shows is that his land where he grew up is in fact beautiful and haunting and colorful and full of variety. And it is just as much home to him as the mountains or the oceans are to somebody else. And so this book of poems, just indirectly and a few very directly and a couple even angry, address the problem of what's happening to the oil fields up in near Williston, North Dakota. Let me just read you one poem from this book. It's called Christmas, Bakken Oil Fields. Those are the fields near Williston, North Dakota. And it is a poem. He imagines a father sitting in a bar in Williston, North Dakota, making tons of money and unable to tear himself away to return to his family just because the money is so good. Christmas, Bakken Oil Fields. When are you coming home, Daddy? He told her each week. Each week he told her. Next week, darling, next week. Daddy's coming home. He said he lied to his daughter each week, swirled his bourbon as his eyes searched the alabaster floor. She's going to have the best Christmas this year. He said she was getting $2,500 for Christmas. That'll make it all worth it, all worth it, all worth it.
Very good.
Isn't that good? And these poems all have that quality. I mean, they address the problem. The problem isn't the oil. The problem is money.
The problem is always money.
And in Williston, you can now go to work for McDonald's and get $17 an hour just because everybody is so money hungry up there. And we're screwing up the land in order to do that.
And I don't know how you deal with that problem because money is the universal elixir. I've mentioned many times Shakespeare says nothing comes amiss, so money comes with all.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that's the idea we have. And life is beautiful and can be beautiful even if you don't have money or have just enough to get along on.
Right.
And I think finding that right level is the secret to happiness in life. If you can find that, you're ahead of the game. Right now, we're just about done with the game, though. Our guest today was Beth Roberts. Roll Tweet, and I'll be back again next week when we search for some kind of activity that's going to happen. That'll be next week on Scribble.